Welcome to Enough, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mandy Leto, ex-investment banker turned executive coach. This is a show for high achievers in fast-paced careers who, in spite of their stellar achievements, never feel quite good enough. Sound familiar? You might be secretly thinking, is this all there is? You're someone whose bar is super high and you're really critical on yourself. Oh, and you're tired, bored, and maybe even burnt out. But almost nobody would know because you're an expert at managing your image. You've had enough of navigating the world like this, but you don't know how else to be. You've got one gear, overdrive. And I feel you because I've been there too. I started a healing self-awareness journey after leaving the corporate world about 16 or 17 years ago. I was bedridden with burnout for about a year. And in these episodes, I'm sharing the experts, techniques, and insights I have encountered along the way as I've changed my way of relating to my overachiever. We talk about things like perfectionism, people-pleasing, imposter syndrome, and detaching your identity from your achievements. The aim here in the show is to explore a more sustainable way of working and to deepen your self-understanding in the process. I'm so glad you're here. So some setup for today's conversation. Think about a time when you achieved something big. Maybe you got a promotion or a book deal, or you actually lived out a massive goal. How long did that satisfaction last? A day? A few hours? And then how did you feel? Well, I suspect you felt empty and wondered, now what? It's such a bummer because you were so darn sure that this was going to be the thing that changed everything. And it didn't. Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, a Harvard-trained positive psychology expert, calls this phenomenon the arrival fallacy, or the illusion that once we make it, whatever that means, we'll find lasting happiness. My guest today is ex-England rugby player Callum Wilson, who knows arrival fallacy firsthand. From the age of 12, Callum knew that he wanted to play professional rugby, but when he actually put the jersey on and he was on the pitch playing for his country, it fell far short of his expectations. Oh, by the way, this is not an episode about rugby. It is a powerful and tender conversation with a tattooed 6 foot, 113 kilogram professional athlete and how he overcame the self-loathing and not enoughness that drove his success for much of his life. Now a coach, Cal shares how he learned to achieve and feel enough without falling into a rival fallacy. You'll also learn how he disconnected his identity from his career, and you'll get a technique to shift you out of your not enough thoughts. If you've ever felt empty after a big win, this episode is for you. Before we dive in, there's a mention of suicide and some spicy language throughout. I drop you right into the conversation as Callum shares where he suspects his feelings of not enoughness started. Ready? Let's dive in.
I felt very different to everyone, and I always felt less than. Love the name of your podcast in respect to that feeling, because I understand that. So I had to find a way to make myself like as different as I felt, red hair or like maybe untraditional parents, that my parents are together, but their dad's a gunsmith making pistols in England. That's like not a normal thing. We're rocking up in like beat up cars to school in a really nice area. Everyone's got their new BMWs and we're in some old Renault. And I just remember from like a really young age feeling, everyone else has got this like really normal thing in their life and I'm less. And I don't know why I felt like that, but I did. And then a few people pick on me for my hair color, not a lot, but my immediate reaction to that was to be very physical. I'm gifted physically. I've probably got three strengths. The third one is my physical strength. And I guess the great thing was that my strength allowed me to be exceptional and even more than, not just average, but people would be like, oh, geez, like Callum's really good at something. So it worked for me. Like being really physical worked for me. My athleticism worked for me. Even in some ways, even academically, I excelled, but it wasn't, I don't know if I'm really the brightest, but I can muscle my way through anything. Like anything in life you put in front of me, I will muscle my way through it somehow. So I use a lot of force in my life. And I knew that. And it, because it worked so well, it felt like I was above people in a way. I spent my whole early life figuring out which sport it was going to be that I was going to go professional in. I thought it was absolutely crazy that you could get paid for something that you loved. But so there was like a deep want and desire there, but there's also this, like, it's my way of making up for my perceived lack. I want to preface that by saying, like, it's crazy now I look back. Not crazy, but like, it's, I understand that childlike thought, but it is bizarre for me to have that thought now I look back, because I really had everything that I needed, unconditional love. And so I was very, like, very privileged, but my perception was that I was behind, at least. And I tried all sorts of things. I rode motorbikes, skateboarded, played hockey, football. And then I was at school one day and I had an option between a detention or playing rugby. And I thought, right, I'll go to rugby. And yeah, I got loads of praise for hitting people really hard. Like, everything that I'd been told off for most of my life was suddenly being praised. So I thought, right, well, that's where I'm going to go with it. So probably after my first game, I remember my first game very clearly. I remember I committed at about 12 years old. I was like, well, I'm just going to be professional with that then. Like, and I mean, like, on the first game, that's when I was like, yeah, that's me. It's not going to stop. And so there was this mixture of desire, but compensation to it. Like, I really like it, but also it's allowing me to feel normal and, like, in some ways better than others, because I still definitely felt lack in other areas. Like, not many people know this about me, but, like, I actually felt like kind of like ugly a lot of my life and clunky. But being exceptional at something made me feel like, well, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what you look like, because you're fucking good at something else.
Callum was devastated not to make the youth rugby team at 16. His determination went into overdrive until a family tragedy added a new angle to his inner story of what his career success was going to solve. I'm always curious when I'm working with a high performer about the hot little motor that's burning underneath their outsized drive. Often it's a deep desire to win, of course. And I notice there's often other things at play. It might be an unwillingness to feel something, or there might be a proving energy, like an I'll show you going on. Callum shares more about what was driving his relentless efforts.
My cousin killed herself. She was very much like a sister to me. We were very close. And she killed herself. And I made a commitment that I would make everyone in the family proud by playing for England. Well, not even playing, by playing professional rugby. But in my mind, I was like, that would be for England. Because I still had that chip on my shoulder about not making it when I was 16. And so there's this other idea got thrown into the mix that, like, you know, if the family felt bad because she killed herself, then I can make them feel good by being successful. So there's this, like, new storyline there. And I managed to represent, my first contract leaving university was in the England 7-a-side team. And I managed to get a cap for England. And I actually remember saying on my way to playing professional rugby, like, I think I'd be able to die happy if I signed my first professional contract. I actually had that as a thought, that my life would be complete. You could kill me the next day. But my experience of all of this is that every time you get there, the horizon just moves on. So you're just chasing, chasing, chasing. And even when I represented my country finally, it was a very empty, dead inside feeling. Like, oh God, I'm still me. Like, as if I thought that I'd suddenly be on the other side of this and feel amazingly happy, but, like, I still cared how many likes I was getting on social media. I still cared what people thought about me. None of it went away, despite the fact that in my mind I'd reached some sort of pinnacle. I went chasing the next thing, which was to try and play in the top leagues in 15-a-side rugby. And I did that. And over in France, I only touched my pinnacle for a very short period. I got one or two games at the top of 7-a-side, and then in the 15-a-side club game. I wasn't there for a long time, but both times I I had this sense of, oh, I'm still me. And how sickening that was, that all this effort had gone in. And yet I still felt how I feel. So rugby didn't solve anything. I remember being in the airport coming back, and I received a cap. That's something you get in, like, if you play for England, you get like a little cap, like a posh, like 1800s looking cap. And I got it in an airport, like, as I was picking my bags up, just sort of like, oh, by the way, here's your cap. And I was like, fuck, you know, I imagine this being different. And like, I went back to my hometown and no one gives a shit. Like, everyone's just got their own stuff to worry about. So yeah, I think I thought people really cared, and they, and I think people did and they don't as well. Like, apples still taste the same the next day. Tea still tastes the same. Like, life doesn't actually change.
This is a textbook case of arrival fallacy. There's a mismatch between how you expect an outcome will feel and how it actually does. There can be a yawning chasm, particularly if your efforts have been outsized because of all the sunk cost, the late nights, the weekends work, the sacrifices. So the outcome rarely feels amazing enough to match that ideal that you had in your head, meaning it's easy to continue pushing all the proverbial poker chips towards another future win. This win wasn't it, so it must be the next big win, and so on and so on. In episode 57, I spoke with Catherine Morgan Schaffler, author and former on-site therapist at Google, and she talked about how perfectionists are pursuing an ideal rather than a goal, which is why they never feel satisfied. So even when the goal is won, the ideal has already moved on. So there's something to this, even if you don't identify as a perfectionist. If you do hit a goal, new challenges pop up that you didn't even see coming. And that's exactly what Callum experienced.
I always imagined that when I'd put on an England shirt, I'd have this feeling of completion, which I guess I imagined there'd be some sort of elation and pride, and that would almost like an armor that would never come off. But I remember pulling on the shirt and thinking, don't fuck this up. And so the shirt became a threat to me rather than an armor. It was like, it was like almost like a weapon. I was like, oh, don't fuck it up. Like, don't make mistakes. And that was the seven aside. I was like, oh, I guess I thought I was going to feel a freedom. That's probably what I thought I was going to feel. And I because of what I had created in my mind, I had actually created a prison for myself where, like, I'd created these imaginary barriers where, like, you can't make mistakes. So I felt very close. Like, and even in the 15 aside, when I played a couple of games at the top in the French league, I had the same feeling, like, oh, when I go out there and I'm going to see my family in the crowd, that's going to be it. Like, I'd have fucking completed it. And all I thought was, like, oh no, now everyone's got the train from London to Paris and you've got friends watching on TV and now you might mess it up.
We humans are a curious species. So reaching a goal can fail to deliver the happiness and good enoughness we were betting on. And yet setting goals can make us really happy. Dr. Ben Shahar suggests creating multiple goals at the same time, some work-related, some non-work-related. You might consider that diversifying your goal portfolio, not putting all your eggs in one basket. So those other goals don't need to be lofty. They might look like, I don't know, spending time moving outdoors 3 times a week, no Ironman necessary, or having a date night and a friend's night at least once a month. Those might not feel like goals if you're a high achiever, but they still count. So let's get back to the conversation. I've had lots of powerful discussions on this podcast with former executives and corporate employees who've left their careers at the pinnacle and then experienced this identity free fall. What was that like for Callum, going from the highs to the lows? He was a sportsman, but this wisdom stands, whatever your business card says.
If you believe that you are what you do, you are fucked, right? Because your sporting career will end. If your identity is wrapped up in what you do, then when you have a bad game, you're going to feel like a bad person. So yeah, as much as it makes you feel good, it's also it will no doubt make you feel bad. So I was like, if you'd asked me who are you, I'd have said I'm a rugby player. I wouldn't have thought about it. But that meant that every time I was out of contract, in my head, I was like, you're not really anything, because you couldn't even say that you're a rugby player because you're not getting paid for it. So what are you? I'm like, oh, I'm nothing. In between my contracts, I'd literally feel like I feel foolish. I'd be out in the park in my hometown, like preparing for the next season without having a team. And I'm like, you're just crazy, man. Like, you're nothing. My career ended with a head injury. Head injuries are, it's not always obvious when you're going to play again. And actually with concussion, it can take years to recover. So you're given a long period. So I had this period of time where I didn't know if I was going to play again and my identity was being stripped from me. Everyone knew me for my physicality, and like, how could I possibly express that if I had a brain injury and I couldn't do anything physical? I'm this 6 foot, 113 kilo guy that spent his whole life being rewarded and even paid for hitting people, and now I'm told that I'll never hit anyone again. And hitting people is my way of feeling good. So there's this moment of like, shit, how are you going to stand out? Because what you do equates to your value. So if you can't do that thing, fuck, are you going to be valuable? How are you going to be seen to be valuable, at least? Because that felt more important than anything.
The challenge of motivating yourself with deficit energy, meaning I feel less than and I'm going to prove to the world that I'm enough, is that the validation is externally sourced. So when the wins and the likes and the promotions and deals stop happening, it can unleash some deep-seated fears, including FOPO, fear of people's opinions, that might kick off all the basic anxieties like fear of rejection, fear of judgment, fear of failure. There can be this deep-seated fear of losing the approval that you're seeking via these outsized achievements, status, and titles. So if I'm not an England rugby player, that thing that I was sure would solve so many things in my life, who am I? If I don't make partner at my private equity firm this year, who am I without that title? If I leave my fancy editor job because I'm bored and burnt out, who am I then? So does my failure, and I'm using air quotes here, take a neon yellow highlighter to my own feelings of lack and inadequacy and surface those? Lots to chew on. Let's go back for a moment to Dr. Ben Shahar's point of creating multiple goals and not all of them work-related. Callum explored coaching and spirituality whilst he was recovering from his brain injury, so he diversified his happiness portfolio. How about you? I know you're a high achiever and that you're busy, but could you start to pay even a little bit more attention to the parts of your life that you've been neglecting that you know nonetheless are really important to you? So in my coaching experience, it's usually the three Fs that fall by the wayside: friends, fitness, and family. What could spending even a little bit more time and attention in some part of your life look like? Maybe your boundaries need reassessing. I asked Callum to share how he started to address some things in his life, particularly the reframe of the critical voice in his head, that deficit thinking that made him feel less than since he was a kid. Through his self-awareness journey, Callum came to see that he is at choice to see the world through deficit thinking or to explore what it would look and feel like to show up as though he's enough. So he's choosing to disbelieve the less than thinking. It's not going anywhere for any of us, but we don't need to believe it. So Callum is in the practice of using his negative internal chatter as a prompt to recenter. Do try this in your own life. It is such a lovely practice.
The more aware I am that I have that choice, everything in my life changes when I suddenly realize that that's a choice. And I think Michael Singer always talks about those moments in your life of like when you get caught up in the I'm not enough or the painful stuff equals it, impressioning or subscarring, is like those are trigger moments just to remind you that you've left yourself. I just remember like reading that church bells are actually designed to remind you of God, to bring you back into God, because you will forget, right? And I always think like, oh, what are the church bells in my life? And the church bells in my life, and the thing that brings me back to like, I'm whole and complete, is my suffering. Like, that's wonderful, isn't it? It's wonderful that like I get caught up in the story that I'm not enough, because that's just a trigger to bring me back to my innate peace, love, and joy. Just accept that maybe just accept that part of you is always going to not feel enough, right? That would stop you resisting it. And if you stop resisting it, you could see it's a massive, massive opportunity to get you back into the way of seeing the world that would have you feel peace, love, and joy and enough. So I think it's all perfect.
At the end of every conversation, I ask the guest to leave a brick of wisdom, something from their journey that they want to leave for you to ponder. So here's what Callum left for you.
If you think that happiness exists as the result of something outside of yourself, then you're never going to be happy. That nothing outside of yourself is going to make you happy, at least not how you want it to. It'd be a moment, an empty moment. What is unveiled to you when you realize you're enough is innate states of peace, love, and joy. When you feel like you're enough, you feel peace, love, and joy. When people feel peaceful, what do? They share peace, they express it. When you feel loving, what do? You express it. And what do you feel when you feel joy? You express it, right? Expression is action, and action changes everything. The flow state is an impersonal state. Like, you see a professional rugby player who is on form, they're not thinking about how good they look. They're not thinking about trying hard. They're not thinking even about winning. They are just totally there. They don't have any concept of themselves. They are just with what is, totally accepting, and they express themselves. There's no ego in there, like, gotta fucking do this. Not in the highest states of performance. The highest states of performance, there is no personal mind in there. There's no ego. So like, if you wanted to reach that high performance, then I would start to acknowledge that that voice is happening, create a new possibility for yourself, like the possibility that what if I'm whole and complete, and start playing life from there. You won't not do anything. Like, hey, you sitting out there listening to this, like if you felt good enough and you didn't feel like making a mistake would make you look worse. So if you couldn't look worse than you are, like you're whole and complete no matter what happens, what would you do? I'd go and take some risks. I'd start saying what I want. I'd start carving a life that I want. Like, you wouldn't sit down. The reason you're sitting down is because you've got in your own head.
If there's some goal or career destination that you're convinced will change everything, I hope this episode has got you thinking. It's not to say don't strive for things, but my invitation is to eliminate the I'll be happy when thinking, or the I'll feel good enough about myself when ... Diversify your goals. Add some simple things. Check your 3 F's for ideas: friends, fitness, and family, and experiment. Does your feeling of satisfaction and happiness improve when everything isn't pinned on achievement? If you want to learn more about Callum, his details are in the show notes. And I'm curious who you know who needs this episode in their headphones pronto. This podcast grows when amazing humans like you share it. So thank you in advance. Let's do this all again in 2 weeks.